Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
And welcome to the Pick and Roll Podcast. And today I have a good one for you guys. So basically today, like I introed and had you guys think about for next week, is basically this week is the players that I'm higher or lower than others. So I was looking through other mock drafts and I definitely have a lot of disparity. Basically, almost everybody in my lottery and some players outside of the lottery. So basically, I'm not going to cover like my whole big board because that would take like 2 to 3 hours because there's a lot of disparity that naturally happens there. So, you know, I have some pretty key names, really big talking points, and mostly the lottery guys because there's a pretty big difference between me and some other guys that have people other places than the lottery. And it's really interesting. So basically, I have those. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys that I'm going to break down that I'm higher on that are all people in my top 10. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people that I have lower than the other people in the mock drafts that are big talking points as well. And, you know, basically break those things down for you guys. It's a really fun talking point, really fun. It's going to be a really fun topic today. It's going to be really interesting. Some really big names. Basically, give the time to expand on the bigger guy, bigger name guys that, you know, we've been covering throughout this whole season when we've been watching weekly breakdowns. It's a really interesting time frame. And yeah, so let's go ahead and kick to it. So the first guy that I'm higher on is the number one ranked guy on my big board. I moved him to number one instead of number two. Is Isaiah Collier. I get Isaiah Collier is a 6'4 point guard from USC, averaged 16.6 points per game, 2.8 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 48% field goal percentage, 32.9% 3-point percentage, 1.5 steals, and 0.02 blocks. For me personally, he is the number one guy ranked on my big board, but in mock drafts, he's going 20th, 25th, and 16th. So it's not even the lottery for a lot of people. And you know, Isaiah Collier has fallen for a lot of people throughout this mock draft season. And a lot of people think that his game is too raw and, you know, the turnovers are an issue and the inability to change pace and, you know, play with pace and he plays too fast is some of the common gripes that people have of him coming out of college. And like I broke down from the last podcast and multiple other podcasts, you know, I disagree with all those sentiments because Isaiah Collier won 6'4", really strong, really athletic. Nobody can stay in front of him. Really quick first step. Definitely feel like prototypes for the play style and the skill set definitely remind me a lot of Tyrese Maxey and De'Aaron Fox coming out, where they're 6'3". They were both 6'3" coming out of Kentucky. You know, De'Aaron Fox shot like 26% from the three-point line, was really poor there. Didn't really show a lot of shot creation other than some like pull-up mid-range shots. And just really elite quickness, athletic gifts, really good passer, fast flashes of passing, but definitely had some turnovers. Like he definitely wasn't super, you know, perfect right now, ready year one to be De'Aaron Fox that we know as him as. Then that's like year 5 or 6 into the NBA. And, you know, De'Aaron Fox is, and Tyrese Maxey also played out of position in Kentucky. He was played at a 2 guard. And, you know, he didn't really show a ton of flashes of shot creation. He was just athletic, get downhill, finish at the rim, have a floater, have a pull-up mid-range shot. It's not like he was shot creating at the three-point line like he does in Philly. And, you know, these are great examples because people have to remember, and this is something that trumps a lot of people, NBA spacing trumps all, okay? Everything is about how can you play within the spacing of the NBA. And it is a completely different world, different universe than college. Colleges are clogged up lanes. College teams might have two shooters on their team that can shoot from three reliably. Maybe even some, maybe one and one and a half. Very, very rare teams have three guys like Creighton does, where they have three guys that can really shoot it from three, or Miami does. It's pretty rare. Most teams have, you know, people that are in the lane, post guys, right? It's a very much more clogged up area in NBA floor than the NBA. Right. There's so much skill in the NBA floor. Nobody can really jump off somebody and play off and, you know, play. It's so much harder to help off people in the NBA. So it's the people that can go downhill and put pressure on that rim elite ways are extremely valuable. Okay. Isaiah Collier is by far the best in this draft class at doing that. He is his own universe. There's nobody else that does it better than him. 6'4", really strong, really quick, really fast. And the greatest gift he has, skill he has, is finishing with contact. I mean, that man jumps into some 7-footer's body, and the 7-footer's body just moves, and he finishes at the rim. I mean, he is extremely elite finishing at the rim. He's NBA ready to finish at the rim. You know, and the three-point percentage isn't that crazy, like 32%. It's pretty decent, right? You know, it does. He has some rare shot creation flashes of a mid-range, you know, step back, or as you'll see a step back three every once in a while, right? It is a skill set very much reminds me of a Scoot Henderson as well, who fits in the De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Maxey, you know, build, right? And so does Russell Westbrook. And these guys are elite basketball players, very elite, and have things that you just can't teach, and usually are the layups of the draft community. What I mean by that is they're so easy to scout because it doesn't take a super trained eye to be like, watch Isaiah Collier for 5 seconds. You'll be like, yeah, he's different athletically, right? Okay, so the reason why Scoot Henderson was a lock for number two pick, there wasn't any talk about Scoot number three. You know, the third best guy in the draft board. No, because he was clearly the number two, because it's an easy scout, because there's so many guys that fit this prototype. It's so much easier for them to succeed than slow skilled guys, right? Because they just have things you can't teach, right? And he totally has the skill set to perfectly match what his gifts are, and that's the elite finishing at the rim, and he's got great passing gifts. Now, is he super polished and ready, NBA ready? If I need a guy to play like Chris Paul year one, is he ready to do that? No. Is he as polished as Lonzo Ball was coming out of UCLA passing? No. Is he as polished as Anthony Black was passing out of college? No. Is he as polished as Josh Giddey was passing coming out of New Zealand? No. But he's very good. He's just below those kind of guys. And he has gifts where he can put passes so fast and strong that it just has a hard time controlling those gifts. But it will come with time. If you don't believe me, watch Russell Westbrook now and then go watch him 3 years into his career where he had trouble controlling his overwhelming passing strength and speed that he could put on passes. And it was a little, now, Russell Westbrook year three was more raw than Isaiah Collier is right now at passing. But, you know, that's a great example of just how those things that people worry about naturally develop with time. People, the NBA draft is not about who's going to be best next year. It's not about who's going to be best year two. It's about who's going to be best, yes, year 5 to 14. If you're drafting somebody to try to, you know, unless you're a win-now team like Denver, where they draft role players, right? That's a very slim margin of teams that are top five teams that want to draft win now guys. But everybody else should be drafting for the future. Everybody should be drafting 4 or 5 years down the line, right? And I'm not saying that Isaiah Collier can't start now, but I'm saying that the idea of like, oh my gosh, is Isaiah Collier going to be the best day one? No, who cares? Who cares? You know who was great year one? Michael Carter Williams. You know who's not great after he didn't grow? That whole thing of who's the rookie of the year, who's going to be the best year one, it's an overreaction. It's an overreaction. It's not the right way to view things. A classic example of this is Brandon Ingram and Julius Randle. Julius Randle was a team hopper for a few years there. It took him 6 to 7 years for him to really put it together and become Julius Randle that's averaging 25 a game as an all-star, right? And Brandon Ingram was extremely thin coming out of Duke, and he just needed a few years to put some muscle on his frame, which just naturally happened. And then, boom, we get 23, 24 points per game, very consistent. Brandon Ingram give you a really efficient bucket. You can't, you know, it's just these people overreact to wanting people to be ready today. This is not today. Who cares about today? Nobody's winning a championship of today other than one team, right? And you're not drafting an Isaiah Collier guy to be year one, I need him to win today, right? This is about year 3, 4, 5. You know what I mean? And he by far has the highest, he has the highest upside in the draft. And, you know, it's really tough. It's really tough because he just has everything you would want from this prototype that we've been drafting very high for a long time frame because it just makes so much sense in the NBA. But for some reason, Isaiah Collier is just, they're not seeing it. And it's a lot of people with college eyes, a lot of people with eyes that only see, you know, high school eyes. It's the NBA is just a different game. It's a completely different game. And he has everything you want. Everything. So, yeah. Isaiah Collier, for me, number one ranked guy in the big board. A lot of these things that people are worried about are overrating things that just naturally develop with time. But he has things you cannot teach. Okay? Okay. Let's go ahead and kick it to the next guy, which is surprising. Cody Williams. Cody Williams is number three ranked for me on the big board. I have him higher than others right now. He's one draft, he was the 10th pick. Another mock draft, he was 8th. Another mock draft, he was 9th. I'm very surprised about this because, you know, Cody Williams was like number one on people's mocks for like a minute there. You know, I don't see what what changed. You know, it's not like he had this crazy poor March Madness performance, but even then, you shouldn't be. March Madness is not indicative of how well you're going to be in, you know, the NBA, and a lot of people rate to March Madness performances. But, you know, what Cody Williams has is he's very elite driving to the rim, elite shooting splits. I mean, this is crazy. Averages 13.7 points per game, 3.3 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 59% field goal percentage, 45% three-point percentage, 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks. I mean, this guy is a really, really highly elite three-point shooter. He is a really, really highly elite rim attacker, which is 59% field goal percentage. Definitely fully explains. He has a really nice floater in the lane. It was really rare, but in like the 5 to 6 full games I've watched him, I did see him actually run a pick and roll once, and he looked really smooth in that situation. Some unique upside there of him being able to be a pick and roll operator, which is really nice from the forward position. You also think he's a better passer than people give him credit for. I view him as a point forward kind of guy. 6'8", long, got a good wingspan. You know, his body frame isn't fully built out yet, but as he grows in this body frame, he'll be able to be a good defender. So I'm like, I just don't understand, because he's such a ridiculous high floor prospect. Like, he definitely, I feel very confident in saying 8, 4, and 6 off of 18, 4, and 6 off of really elite shooting splits is what I see him being, and being a very good defender as well. You know, I could definitely see him being a very similar player to kind of what Andrew Wiggins is right now in Golden State. Not what people expected him to be. But what he is now, like Andrew Wiggins, really elite attacking the rim. Cody Williams, really elite attacking the rim. Andrew Wiggins, really elite shooting standstill three-point shots. Cody Williams, really elite shooting standstill three-point shots. Andrew Wiggins, every once in a while, he'll show you some rare shot creation. There's some stuff there. Yeah, Cody Williams, every once in a while, will give you a nice floater. Every once in a while, I can run a pick and roll. Nothing too crazy, but there's like a pull-up mid-range shot there. Is it like really elite shot creation? No, but it's really easy, and because of, again, NBA spacing, his ability to attack the rim is more valuable. And, you know, what he does defensively, Andrew Wiggins is a very, very good defender. Cody Williams can be kind of like that kind of guy. So I just don't understand. Oh, 8 to 10? I personally don't see that at all. I feel like he could be such a, because this is the thing about Cody Williams, because Cody Williams could win 5 championships as being the third best player in a championship team because all the things he does, right? He can be a point forward, right? He can be a, you know, run a pick and roll and give really efficient offense because he defends really well. He is the kind of ideal piece that you'd want on a championship team, right? Like, he's a winning basketball player. He's not going to lose games by shooting too many shots and, you know, taking bad looks. You know, he plays very efficient basketball, right? And I'm just so confused as to why people are so low on him all of a sudden after having him like number one. You know, a few weeks ago, this would have been, I'm lower on Cody Williams because I have a three and everybody has a one. I don't know what's happening, but yeah, Cody Williams has just got such a high floor. Just got such a, he's such an easy scout, so translatable to the NBA. Just makes way too much sense to have him 8, 10, and 10 in mock drafts. Me personally, I'm sticking with the number 3 on my big board for Cody's. Alrighty, next guy up is Rob Dillingham. Rob Dillingham is right now the 9th pick in a mock draft, the 3rd pick in the 12th pick, and I have him ranked 4th on my big board. You know, I have him averaged 15 points per game, 2.8 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 48% field goal percentage, 44% three-point percentage. You know, Rob Dillingham's another one of those guys, like a few weeks ago, everybody kind of had him where I have him, like 3, 4, 5 in mocks. You didn't see him any lower. So I'm very surprised by this. You know, he is, I still view him the exact same way. He is a very elite shot creator from the 3-point line, the mid-range, his footwork, all those type of things. He's the most skilled guy in the draft, in my opinion, especially like 3-point and mid-range shot creation. That's the best way to term it. The most skilled guy in the mid-range and 3-point shot creation that exists in this draft is Rob Dillingham. You know, a really good passer, I'd call him maybe above average passer in the NBA. Obviously, he won't be a great defender, but his ability, he's also so much better of a finisher at the rim than you would expect. The 48% field goal percentage really speaks to that. He has great finishing angles and really has such tough finishes that it overcomes his 6-foot height. And, you know, you watch Darius Garland, again, coming out of Vanderbilt, and he only played a few games with Vandy before getting hurt. But if you watch him, and then you watch Darius Garland, Rob Dillingham, you'd be like, wow, are they similar? They're so similar in skill set, how they move, the passing ability, the shot creation, the, you know, otherworldly finishing ability, skill set to overcome their lack of height, right? And there's just so many things there that makes Rob Dillingham, for me, the 4th guy. And, you know, I feel like he can definitely be a low-tier all-star in the NBA. You know what I mean? I definitely feel like that's very possible for Rob Dillingham. I definitely feel like that's very similar to Darius Garland, and I do not understand why he's falling on everybody's mocks. All right, the next guy to break down that I have higher and that I'm higher than is Kyle Filipowski. I have him number 6th on my big board. He is a 7-footer. Averaging 16.7 points per game, 8 rebounds, 2.8 assists, 50% field goal percentage, 35% three-point percentage, 1.1 steals, 1.6 blocks. In mock drafts, he's went 24th pick in one mock, 16th pick in another mock, and 27th pick in another mock. Kyle Filipowski, if this was the first year where me and my best friend were doing the podcast together, Basketball Addicts Podcast, where we covered NBA basketball talk all year round, I would have had Kyle Filipowski 19, 20, 21, somewhere around there, around the same pick range that I had Alperen Sengun. Okay? Now, look, I was wrong about Alperen Sengun. A lot of people were wrong about Alperen Sengun. So when you're wrong about somebody like that, you learn from the things that they do well in the NBA and what things you might have to learn and train your eye to see better, right? And Kyle Filipowski checks out so many boxes that Alperen Sengun has success in Houston. And also, the prototype for Sengun is obviously Nikola Jokic. So there is some Nikola Jokic stuff there. You know, I don't like comparing people to Hall of Fame, all-time great players, but Nikola Jokic is the prototype for the Sengun and, you know, so on and so forth. So what Kyle Filipowski has is he's a better three-point shooter than Sengun. He shoots 36% from the three-point line. That's something similar to Jokic, where he's a good three-point shooter. But, you know, the thing that makes these centers great is the passing, right? I mean, Bam Adebayo is also very good. Domantas Sabonis is very good. There really isn't a good passing center that isn't really highly utilized in the NBA. I can't think of a great bench passing center. I can't think of a single one. And there's a very, very easy reason why. It's because their passing leads to extremely efficient looks because you got a double. Because it's about the NBA. It's about switchability, right? So, you know, a guy like Desmond Bane can get stuck in the post against Alperen Sengun. Now you kick it to the Alperen Sengun in the post. They double. Alperen Sengun kicks it to the wing, and either that guy in the wing's open, or he swings the ball, and he swings the ball open to a guy who's either open, or he swings the ball to another person that's open. Well, somebody's going to be open, right? And they're going to make the defense rotate, right? And it's just such easy offensive opportunities, right? It's just passing centers are all really highly utilized, and you know they're basically most of the all-stars. Bam's a good passing center. Domantas Sabonis, a borderline all-star, right? Nikola Jokic's good passing center. You know, Alperen Sengun's a borderline, you know, all-star. Like, these guys that fit these prototypes, all very, very highly coveted, well-paid guys, right? So, you know, Kyle Filipowski's passing is where he becomes in a different tier. Now, you know, the skill set that he has, he's a 7-footer. You know, the skill of the being able to take a center off the dribble and then have the 3-point line and then hit a pull up mid range shot is crazy for the center position. I've seen him do it, right? Or the ability to take somebody off the dribble, handle from the 3-point line, and then spin. He has a great spin move. That's definitely the number one skill that I feel like, you know, makes me say Sengun and Filipowski is they both have insanely elite spin moves. They spin to the rim and then he, you know, gets a layup and finishes, right? Like, Kyle Filipowski has a lot of handle gifts and post skill, great post footwork, and the feet remind me so much of Sengun, and the skill reminds me so much of what makes Sengun work. Now, he's a little bit taller. Sengun's 6'10". Filipowski is a 7-footer. He looks like a legit 7-footer, you know. And on top of that, you know, Kyle Filipowski is a better 3-point shooter than him. Now, a lot of people like to talk about, oh, Kyle Filipowski's a thinner guy. Yeah, he isn't as strong as, you know, Jokic, Sabonis, Sengun, but he's taller than most of them, right? And, you know, I do think that he'll put on more body and frame as he gets older. He definitely has more body frame than he did last year. I understand that defensively he doesn't look amazing, but neither does Sengun in the NBA right now. Neither does Jokic. Neither does Sabonis, right? Like, those guys are pretty average at the, you know, NBA defending the rim, but people forget that 7-foot you can't teach, right? And he's gotten better at those things. He's gotten better at moving on the perimeter than last year and, you know, being switchable. And he's looks passable. Below average NBA defender at the center position, but passable. Sengun's passable. You know, Jokic is passable. Sabonis is passable, where it's just good enough, right? That they're not going to be studs, but they overcome it with really highly efficient looks that they create for others that leads to really highly efficient offenses, right? And, you know, Filipowski isn't a great athlete, but again, Sabonis is not a great athlete. Jokic is not a great athlete, you know. Sengun's not a great athlete. So, you know, I truly believe in Kyle Filipowski's offensive upside much more than anybody else does. But it's because of the lessons learned from being wrong about Sengun. You know, I had to take a hard look at, like, why did I get that wrong? And, you know, it was mostly underrating his 6'10 length and him not being an overly great athlete. But, you know, I didn't understand how good his offensive skill is and how translatable those type of things are to the NBA, right? And, you know, Kyle Filipowski's passing is where he unlocks his offensive upside and becomes part of this Domantas Sabonis, Jokic, and Sengun group where he can be a center like those kind of guys, right? And I definitely feel like I still have him number 6 in my big board. I really believe in him. And, you know, it's a learning process of what I was wrong about in the past that's leading me to be really high on Filipowski. All right, let's go ahead and kick it to the next guy that I'm higher on, which is the last person on my list, Yavis Messi. So Yavis Messi's 6'11" center from Baylor, 10.9 points per game, 5.6 rebounds, 0.4 assists, 62.4 field goal percentage, 0 3-point percentage, 0.6 steals, 1.5 blocks, He's in mock drafts. He's been drafted 18th pick, 17th pick, and 22nd pick. For most people, he was in the lottery, so I'm surprised by this really big fall. You know, he checks up so many boxes of ideal center. 6'11", really genuinely ideal center height, because 6'11" usually can move laterally than like 7'1", 7'2", 7'3". So 6'11" honestly is like the ideal center height, where you're not too short where you can't defend the rim, but you're also not too tall where your hips are, you know, aren't as smooth and can't move usually as well. You know, the Evan Mobleys, the Alex Sars of the world that can move really well for those heights are extremely rare, and that's why those are, you know, top five picks. Right. So, you know, I definitely feel like also Wemby's fits in that group, but, you know, Wemby's a Debbie human. So, yeah, let's leave Wemby's name out of this because, you know, it is what it is. Wemby's crazy. Okay. Only person I've ever called a generational talent. All right. Let's not keep on talking about Wemby because we can talk about this for 20 more minutes. Man, he was fun to watch last year. Okay. Okay. Back on to Yavis Messi. So, you know, he has a really ideal mix of, you know, being able to guard the perimeter, being a really good rim blocker at the rim. I mean, he's got a really great strong frame. You know, he's a really good vertical athlete, but that vertical athletic gifts aren't like overcome with really tight hips. He's not super tight hip, moves pretty well on the perimeter, maybe above average perimeter defender, and very good rim defender. Now, it's going to take him a few years to grow into being a really good rim defender, because he can definitely bite on pump fakes and, you know, send people to the free throw line. But again, centers take usually a few years to become who they are and, you know, grow into the NBA game, because there's a lot of grown men that play center in the NBA that are just.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So filled out and understand how to do the little things that most people don't notice very well. And so, you know, Yavis Messi can become better, you know, obviously through time and maybe not jumping on pump fakes as much as he does in Baylor, but, you know, he has a really strong body frame. He'll grow into it really well. You know, he's a really good screen setter. He's a really good roller to the rim where he can be a really high level lob threat. I definitely feel like something that's unlocked is offensive upside that I've talked multiple times about. It's the flashes of the handles really intriguing, because he'll take centers off the dribble off the 3-point line and go finish at the rim. And that's a really unique wrinkle that he's added to his game that can really lead to like really efficient 6 to 8 points per game in the NBA. That's added on top of, okay, so the best way to explain this is Yavis Messi could easily average like 10 points per game, 8 rebounds, being a really good screener, being a really good, you know, pick and roll operator, diving to the rim, lob threat, finishing at the rim, rebounds, right? But the handle could really offer like a plus 6 to the points where he's averaging 15 or 16 a game, because he could take people off the dribble and get really efficient looks there, right? And on top of that, a really big thing that's developing in the NBA is a lot of centers are really good at getting the ball in the pick and roll at the free throw line and being able to drive to the rim and finish at the rim. You know, Jalen Durant's developed a skill set recently. Draymond Green, even though he's not a center, has always had that skill set for the, you know, the Warriors. Sengun can do that type of stuff. Sabonis, Bam, Jokic, Sengun can also do those type of things. It's a really, really, you know, important skill set that have for the center position that could really highly induce your upside even more offensively. So I think those little things that he shows definitely leads to more of a higher upside than I think people are realizing, where he can really have a solid 14 to 15 a game that could be like 60% field goal percentage. It gives people a nice solid scoring output for a center position. You know what I mean? And I definitely feel like he's a better version completely of Mitchell Robinson, where he's the same height as Mitchell Robinson. He's a little stronger, a little more athletic, a little better moving, you know, laterally. He's a little bit better of a rebounder. Also, Yavis Smith is a very good rebounder. It's a little bit better as a, like a lob threat. He's a little better at setting screens. He's a little better. I also mentioned strength wise. He's a little better at the handle thing. You know what I mean? He's kind of like completely just a little bit better than Mitchell Robinson at like everything. Yeah, it's tough to understand, but, you know, that's the best way I could put Yavis Messi. And, you know, I definitely feel like he has such a high floor to being a really solid role-playing center in the NBA. I don't understand why everybody's not really, you know, is so low on him, because he really is the ideal center prospect that's just really easy to scout. Like I said before, 6'11". Perfect height for the center position, because he can guard the perimeter a little bit better than the 7-footers and people 7 foot above, but also tall enough to defend the rim. So, you know, he's got a lot of things that's just really ideal about him, and I just don't understand the hate for him. How the lottery is insane. First guy to break down that I am lower on is Donovan Clingan. So this is kind of funny, because for a very long time frame, I was really higher on than everybody else on Donovan Clingan. Right now, I have him 10th on my big board. He is a 7'2" center from UConn, averaged 12.4 points per game, 6.9 rebounds, 1.9 assists, 63.7% field goal percentage, 33% three-point percentage, but he only took 6 three-point shots this year, so that 33% three-point percentage is not indicative of how well he can actually shoot. 3.5 steals, 2.3 blocks. And the mock drafts, he's going the 3rd pick, the 5th pick, and the 6th pick in 3 different mock drafts. So he's much higher than where I have him. He's much higher than he used to be. This is definitely post-March Madness raise here. You know, Donovan Clingan, I have loved all year, because I love his defense. The dude's incredible shot blocker at the rim, but he's also has a great mix of not really fouling and, you know, defending the rim, right? And I definitely feel like you could definitely title him more acutely as a great rim defender than a great shot blocker. He does a lot of little things well. He defends the pick and roll better than you would think. He moves a little bit better than you would think. Guards the guards in the pick and roll, especially much better than you would think. He uses his size well. He doesn't give them free looks. He still contests things very well. He puts pressure on people, and he can really recover very well. Defensively, he's the real deal. Offensively, though, you know, he's a very great screener. He's a very good roll guy to the basket. He's a, you know, above average passer for this center position. He rebounds extremely well. But other than that, there's like no offensive upside. You know, my comp for him, somebody I feel very confident in the comp, is Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert was a phenomenal defender for a very long time frame for the Indiana Pacers, when he defended the rim so well, but his offensive ceiling was not that great, which limited how great of a player he could be. Right, and I view Donovan Clingan in the same vein, where I just don't see him scoring more than 10 to 12 points per game. And I have him ranked as this 10th guy. I've always liked him throughout this year, but top 5 pick? No, he doesn't have the offensive ceiling of a top 5 guy. He doesn't have the offensive upside and the offensive ability to be drafted at that pick. Does a lot of things very well, and his teammates love him. I definitely feel like he's a very safe, lead-to-winning pick. You know what I mean? Just like Roy Hibbert did in the NBA, and just like Donovan Clingan does in college. So, you know, this isn't like I'm trying to hate on him, because he's been one of my personal favorite guys to watch, so I don't want to like rip into him, but he's definitely not a top 5 pick in the draft. You know, I definitely don't see that. I don't think his offense of abilities weren't anywhere close to that. But, you know, he does everything else extremely well, extremely great. So, yeah. And Donovan Clingan, even though I'm technically lower on, it just pains my heart to talk bad about him, because hey, he's been one of my favorite personal, you know, favorite watches throughout the scouting season. So, you know, what's the point ripping into somebody that I really enjoy watching like that? Alrighty, next man up on the person I'm lower than is Stephon Castle. I have him ranked 12th on my big board. 6'6 point guard from UConn, averaging 11.12 points per game, 4.3 rebounds, 3 assists, 47.4 field goal percentage, 30% 3-point percentage, 1 steal, 0.5 blocks. In the mock drafts, he's going the 5th pick, 4th pick, and 12th pick. You know, so, you know, Stephon Castle is definitely the best guard defender in this draft. He's very similar to Anthony Black in last year's draft, though, 6'6 point guard from Arkansas that got drafted in the 8th pick in the draft. I think they're 8th or 6th, 7th, or by the Orlando Magic. You know, he's very good at getting downhill, just like Anthony Black was last year coming out of Arkansas. You know, Anthony Black was a little bit better of a passer than Stephon Castle is. You know, I understand that Stephon Castle didn't technically play point guard, but when you watch like 5, 6, 7 full games of him, you can get a gauge on how good of a passer somebody is, even if they're playing out of position. I would say he's maybe average to above average passer for the point guard position. Nothing as close as Anthony Black was last year. But, you know, I wasn't as high as Anthony Black, nor was as high on Dyson Daniels when he was coming out. And these guys are in the similar frame where they're just lack any real skill. And a lot of these NBA draft people are really overly enticed by the 6'6 guard because they feel bad about missing SGA. That's my theory, is that they feel bad about missing on SGA. And I was like, 6'6 point guard, how we miss on it, right? Right, but SGA had so much more skill coming out of Kentucky than any of these guys that, you know, are 6'6 point guards. And, you know, I get it. Stephon Castle attacks to the rim really well, but his mid-range shot is not just okay, not just below average, not just bad. It's abysmal bad. I'm talking two out of the four times I've seen him shoot a mid-range shot, he's bounced it off the backboard. I mean, it is really, really, really raw. And it's not like he's got tons of shot creation off their dribble and all this footwork and being able to break people down. He's very raw in those sentiments as well. You know, he has some things that he's very good at. Again, defending and attacking the rim. Does those things at elite levels, right? But there's other things there that are just very, very, very raw. And it's very similar to Anthony Black and Dyson Daniels, where, you know, they were 6'6 point guards, and Dyson Daniels was a good passer, good defender, but everything else was really raw and could attack the rim well. Anthony Black, coming out of Arkansas, was a really good passer, a really good defender, attacked the rim well, but mid-range shot and three-point shot, really raw, right? And so far, those two guys looks like they're not really meeting the draft expectations so far, you know? Dyson Daniels averaging like 5 to 6 a game, year 2 or 3 in the NBA, and Anthony Black year 1's averaging like 3 to 4. You know, these guys are looking like rotational pieces. You know, obviously I don't want to rush the judgment there, but so far it's just looking like these pushes to be like 6'6 point guard, we have to draft him. He's so valuable. It's so hard to find because they missed on SGA, but SGA had so much more skill, so much more skill coming out of Kentucky than these guys. It was a 40% three-point shooter that like had shot creation out the dribble and mid-range shot creation. He just looked slow. Well, smooth. There's a difference between smooth and slow. But SGA lulled people into thinking he was less athletic than he was. But, you know, that's a separate tangent. But, yeah, I like Stephon Castle, obviously, because I have him ranked 12th, right? But I don't view him as a 5 to 4th, 12th pick. But I definitely can see him going that high in the draft because of how overly in love these NBA franchises have been with tall point guards in recent drafts and overvaluing them, in my personal opinion. Alrighty, let's go ahead and kick it to the next guy that's in a similar vein. A 13th ranked guy for me is Nikola Topic, 6'6 point guard from Serbia, 18.6 points per game, 13.7 rebounds, 6.9 assists, 52% field goal percentage, 28% three-point percentage, 0.09 steals, and 0.2 blocks. In mock drafts, he's going to the 2nd pick, the 3rd pick, and the 15th pick. And I have, again, 13th on my big board. So things Nikola Topic does well is he's a very good rim attacker. Even though he is, you know, lacking athletic gifts, he can definitely go downhill. You know, he has a good enough handle and a good enough ability to change paces and get to the rim. He's a very good passer. You know, he's probably, if I had to think about it, might be the best, most polished point guard passer coming out of the draft. Maybe not better than Kokek, but top three, especially for freshmen or, you know, 18 to 19 year olds. That's what they put it. You know, so Nikola Topic's a really elite passer in those ways, but, you know, everything else is really below average to poor. The mid-range shot, just like Stephon Castle's, really, really raw. The three-point shot's really, really raw. You don't see any, and I mean any, shot creation off the dribble. Most you see is a pull-up mid-range shot, like once out of three games, or a pull-up three-point shot once every four games. It's just extremely raw for Nikola Topic. And he has a huge, glaring red flag, which is the defense. I mean, it is atrociously bad. He is the worst defender in the lottery. Yeah, in my lottery. He's the worst defender that's going to go in the top 14 picks in this draft class. It's not like, oh, he just doesn't understand how to defend. And sometimes when he's focused, man, he can defend. No, I've seen him focus because, you know, he definitely in the ABA league, when you watch him play, he's definitely a worse, less focused defender than when he played the one game in the Euro League that I did watch where he only played like three quarters of it, but before getting hurt. And even though he looked like he was giving more energy to the defensive end, there's still just natural, extreme tightness in his hip and his ability to move laterally that you can't really teach. You can't teach somebody to become more athletic. Their gifts are their gifts. And he is a utterly terrible defender, right? And most people draft 6'6 point guards because, like, oh, yeah, he's going to be able to defend. Not him. Not him. Not him. No. He's going to have a red flag standing out of his bag, you know, when people, because the NBA is all about switchability, and you have a 6'6 point guard that defends as poorly as he does, it's really bad. I mean, I watched a full game of Luka Doncic play coming out of Real Madrid, and Luka Doncic looks like a more gifted defender than Nikola Topic does. That should put it in perspective how bad it is, okay? It is utterly atrocious, okay? You know, so Nikola Topic is going to need to be, you know, the best defender he possibly can be and work really hard to be able to get himself on the floor. He has some gifts, passing and attacking the rim-wise, that are very intriguing. You know, I think it'd be a long-term, you know, I feel like his peak would be a low-tier starting point guard in the NBA. And, you know, I feel like similar things for Stephon Castle as well. They're very different, even though they're the same size in the point guard position. But yeah, on Nikola Topic, I just haven't believed as much as everybody else throughout the season. And I still, you know, don't view him as the way a top 2 to 3 pick at all. I don't really see 2 through 3 at all. And I never have. Alrighty, let's go ahead and kick it to the next guy that I'm lower than, which is Reed Sheppard. Reed Sheppard is a 6'2" point guard from Kentucky, averaged 12.7 points per game, 4.3 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 54% field goal percentage, 52% three-point percentage, and 2.5 steals, 0.07 blocks. And mock drafts is going from the 11th pick, 8th pick, 10th pick in mocks. You know, Reed Sheppard has some just natural gifts that are just really scary, because he is obviously a very good standstill three-point shooter, got a really great pull-up three-point shot, you know, extremely elite in those areas. And I definitely feel like he shows some rare flashes of attacking the rim, but most of the time it looks pretty raw. You look at him try to attack the rim, and he'll try to, he usually won't be that aggressive when he's doing those type of things, because he just doesn't really, he gets blocked a lot at the rim. He gets really good looks where most point guards would be able to finish around the rim. He has just issues, and it stems from lack of athletic gifts. He would definitely be considered slow for the NBA, not very explosive. He does flash those abilities, but it's a really high question mark. He also doesn't have like a ton of mid-range shot creation as well. Like, pull-up mid-range shots is extremely rare, you know, and overall he just doesn't, shot creating off the dribble for him is just not, you know, something that he is going to be able to do consistently. You know, me personally, I viewed him as like a better three-point shooting Tyus Jones, who's a really high-tier backup point guard in the NBA that's in a situation in Washington where he is a starting guy. I feel like he could be something like that. I personally don't see the long-term upside that everybody else is seeing with Reed Sheppard, and that's why I have him at 15 rather than the 11th, 8th, 10th picks that the mock drafts have him. All right, so the next person to break down that I'm lower on is Jared McCain. Jared McCain is a 6'3" or 6'2" shooting guard from Duke. 14.3 points per game, 5 rebounds, 1.9 assists, 46% field goal percentage, 41% three-point percentage. So Jared McCain is somebody that I have not put on my big board yet, but mock drafts, he's going the 16th pick, 6th pick, then 14th pick. And if he is 6'3", he'll be somewhere in my second round, so anywhere from 31 through 60. If he's 6'2", he will not be on my big board. Okay, so the reason why is, one, I do think Jared McCain is 6'2", because coming out of high school, he's 6'2". College schools, colleges lie about the heights of their players all the time. And basically, like, a good example of that is Desmond Bain at TCU was listed at 6'6". He's like 6'4", 6'3". Rob Dillingham is clearly 6', came out of high school 6'. Kentucky, they list him 6'2", or 6'3". Right? Like, these colleges lie. Lie about their player's heights. Okay. I also saw him next to a guy with the last name O'Connell that played for NC State, 6'2", listed in ESPN, and he looked like the exact same height. So I do think that Jared McCain is 6'2". But we'll talk about if he's 6'3" or 6'2". So, you know, things Jared McCain does well is he's got a great body frame, below average NBA athletic gifts. You know, he can move off ball and catch and shoot 3-point shots. Every once in a while, he'll drive to the rim and finish. There's not much else in his game other than that. Defensively, let's talk about passing too. I would like to state this. He'll never be a point guard. He doesn't have the passing gifts. You know, Rob Dillingham was in a perfect situation as a perfect example of this. He played 2-guard in Kentucky, but flashed so much passing gifts that it's so easy to say, yeah, Rob Dillingham's going to be a point guard in the NBA because we saw passing abilities at Kentucky, even if it was the 2-guard position. Jared McCain doesn't show anywhere near that. He's at best an average NBA shooting guard passer. I mean, if you want to see him really have a rough time, watch him play Houston March Madness and have like a ton of turnovers because he kept on getting razzled. And, you know, whenever they would double him, he would turn over the ball. It was really, really bad. He looked really not ready to be anywhere close to a point guard level guy. So, you know, Jared McCain, yeah, can move off ball. He can do those type of things. But 6'3 and defensively, a short wingspan. I mean, at best, it's 6'3, 6'4. Maybe at best 6'5". That's probably being a little generous there. It's a small wingspan. He has small arms. So defensively is where the issues lie. 6'3" shooting guards are really rare. You know, the only ones that start are really like Anthony Edwards, Donovan Mitchell, Cam Thomas, really elite shot creators. And Jared McCain doesn't have anywhere close to that kind of skill set. He reminds me of like a 6'3" Corey Kispert. And the thing is his skill set is such a big thing. Like, there's tons of people that come out of college with his skill set. It's nothing that crazy. It's not, you know, mind-blowing. And a good idea of this is, you know, do you remember when Buddy Hield came out of the draft and was like, oh my gosh, Buddy Hield's going to be XYZ coming out of the NBA, and he just comes off ball and does the type of stuff. Like, there's thousands of Buddy Hields, right? But you got to be tall enough to guard, you know, the 2-guard position, right? And the guys that are 2 guards that have that off ball movement skill are like so tall. Duncan Robinson, Max Strus, you know, Klay Thompson, Kevin Huerter. They all are really tall for their size, and they really move off ball extremely well. And, you know, him being 6'3" is a defensive liability. because he has a short wingspan, average at best athlete, below average to poor on ball defender. And because of switchability in NBA offenses, he will be attacked, right? You can usually only have one 6 foot two, 6 foot three guy on the floor at a time. But because he can't be a point guard, he's going to be a two guard. And it's going to be so easy to attack him, to get Kawhi Leonard on a switch and type of guys on him, and he's going to be guarding them, and they'll be easy points, right? So the 6'3 two guard is highly criticized and highly scrutinized by NBA coaches and GMs, right? And so I just, because of all of those reasons, I just don't view his skill set as super elite, mind-blowing. I view his height as a weakness. I view his lack of athleticness plus his height plus a short wingspan as a very obvious defensive weakness. So yes, if he's 6'3", he'll be in my second round of my big board. But if he's 6'2", he won't be on my mock draft. He won't be on my top 60. And that's what I think he is. I think he's 6'2" because he came out of high school 6'2". He's listed as 6'3" at Duke. He looks 6'2". So I think he's going to be 6'2". And Google 6'2" shooting guards in the NBA. You quickly find out that they don't exist. There is not a 6'2" shooting guard in the NBA. They do not exist. There is clear, you know, indicators on these type of things. Historical indicators. And he does not meet those historical indicators. So, you know, because of all those reasons, I'm not buying the hype on Jared McCain. If somebody, you know, wants to lose their mind about, you know, Jared McCain and overdraft him, it'll probably be a bust because he's just not worth that kind of draft capital at all. Alrighty, next guy to break down is the 45th ranked guy on the big board, which is Zach Edey. He's 7'4", center from Purdue, 24.2 points per game, 11.7 rebounds, 2 assists, 61.9% field goal percentage, 0% 3-point percentage, 0.3 steals, 2.2 blocks. And mock drafts is going the 12th pick, 19th pick, and the 17th pick. So, you know, obviously, Zach Edey in a different time frame, 15, 20 years ago, he would have been the number one pick in the draft. And offensively, he would be so good in the post. But the reason why he's not that viewed that way for me is I don't think that he can be trusted defensively. You know, whenever a good guard plays him, he gives up a ton of points in the pick and roll. He can't guard the pick and roll to save his life. He is limited with not good lateral overall athletic gifts. He's very stiff. He can't guard the pick and roll. And bro, if you can't guard the pick and roll in the NBA, you're not going to be on the floor because everybody runs hundreds, not hundreds, but you know what I mean. Pick and roll is ran so high quantity. Like if you can't guard that as a center position and you do it as poorly as Zach Edey does, you can't get on the floor. And, you know, a good example of this is last year, there was a guy named Jalen Hood-Schifino who was like the 15th, 16th pick in the draft by the Lakers. And, you know, he looked like a superstar playing against him last year. We had like 23, 24 points in that game. I mean, it was just, you know, you could tell Zach Edey can't guard that kind of guy. And, you know, the NBA guards are 3 times as good as college guards, right? So if he can't guard the pick and roll college, what do you think's going to happen against Steph and Trae Young and Dame and, you know, even low tier guys like, you know, Tyus Jones? And like, I don't see how he's guarding these guys. And I feel like it's a very reasonable thing. Most of all, people have been thinking throughout the year, but March Madness has, you know, moved up his draft stock. I personally don't think that he can defend in the NBA. So that's why I have him as 45th draft pick. And I could see him coming off a bench in a scoring role on, you know, the post. But, you know, the pick and roll is where his real issue lies. This is in college. Alrighty, so that is the end of the players that I'm higher and lower on breakdown. So next week is going to be really fun. It's going to be basically grading my big board from 2020. So basically, again, like 4 years ago, you know, me and my best friend were doing the podcast called the Basketball Ass Podcast. We're called it covered NBA content year round. So I thought it'd be fun to go over the 2020 NBA draft class. The first time that we ever covered this type of thing, that was Jalen Green, Kate Cunningham's draft class. Just give you a little intro. Really fun. Can't wait to break that down for you guys. Thank you guys for listening. I really hope you guys all have a great week. And I really appreciate anybody who listens to the podcast, talks to their friends about the podcast, shares the podcast. It's really cool. Really appreciate it. So hopefully you all have a great week. Peace out.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.